This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Halfway through today's show on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN1290. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mindell. Joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. Michael Remus has been doing a great job opping today, and of course every song he's played has the theme of love in it. So I'm always waiting to jump in to intro the segment because I want to hear what song. Is this Bryan Adams here, Remus?
One Night Love Affair by Bryan Adams. Coming up here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Deflaming of TSN 1260 in Edmonton of the Pipeline Show. Hopefully he hasn't hung up yet.
No, not at all. Nothing wrong with some Bryan Adams.
Been a big week here in Winnipeg, of course, with the big trade of Zach Bogosian and Evander Kane to Buffalo for a host of prospects. And, of course, the Jets prospects get a lot of run here in Winnipeg. Yeah, I want to start off with one of the prospects that the Jets did acquire, now playing in Rochester, of the AHL, Joel Armia. What can you tell us about his game and what people say about him within the hockey world?
I think he's pretty hot and cold. I mean, there's lots to like. He's got terrific size, and he has the ability to put up some points, and he skates pretty well, but he's inconsistent. And I remember when the World Junior Championship was here in Edmonton, Edmonton and Calgary, but Finland was playing in Edmonton. He was really ineffective. He seemed to get a bunch of points, but was unnoticed. He was not a player that stood out during the actual games. But the next season at the World Juniors, he was one of the leading scorers. And I think that's kind of followed him over here in North America, playing in the American Hockey League, where he's been hot and cold. I think this year has been more hot than cold, and that is probably a good sign for the Winnipeg Jets. But I think I won't be surprised if he's a guy who's still playing in the American Hockey League next year. But he could be pushing the pace there to get some time at the NHL level. I know he's seen a little bit of action with the Buffalo Sabres, I believe. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I think he's probably still got another year to go.
Brendan Lemieux, the other player that was other prospect, I should say, because there were four players that were acquired by the Winnipeg Jets, but the other prospect that was acquired by the Winnipeg Jets currently playing with the Barry Colts, which we've dubbed the unofficial pipeline of the Winnipeg Jets as far as the OHL goes. But Brendan Lemieux, son of Claude Lemieux, what can you tell us as far as the strengths and weaknesses of Brendan Lemieux's game?
Well, I think everybody has probably said it. I mean, one of the first things you hear about is that he's exactly like his dad and plays the same way. And that I mean, can be a strength and a weakness, right? I mean, you certainly like the ability to not just agitate and get under the skin of the opposition, but contribute offensively. And on the flip side of that is the tendency to take some penalties and play. You know, it's a fine line, walking that line of being a pain in the ass to play against, pardon me if I can't say that there, but also being an effective guy and not somebody that's going to be a detriment to the team by taking a lot of penalties. And he is a player who is susceptible to crossing the line the negative way. So if he can round that out, and maybe maturity helps in that regard, but you know, if he is exactly like his dad, then that's something that Jets fans are probably going to have to learn to live with.
In addition to the players, the Jets picked up a first-round pick, which is likely to be late. Just how deep is this draft?
Yeah, it's pretty strong. For me, it's the best draft since 2008. And I know a lot of people will go back to 2003. I don't know if it's quite that strong, but I think there will be players in the second round who will turn out to be pretty darn good NHL guys. So the fact that the Jets were able to add another pick at the end of the round, no matter which one it is, I think they're still going to get a pretty good player, whether it's at 20 or 25 or 28. That's a nice pickup for the Jets.
He didn't even ask you off the outset. What did you think of the trade from your perspective?
I liked it, and it was. I kind of understand it from both the perspective of both teams, and that's a rare situation where I think both teams make out all right. I think from Buffalo, they get, well, you know what they get in Zach Bogosian, and I looked at it as kind of Bogosian for Myers, and to me, they're both second-pairing defensemen, so they're the same draft year. Mm-hmm. Kind of a wash for me. Maybe Myers has more upside, and I think he will be a better player in Winnipeg than he was in Buffalo, where he's going to have more support on a better blue line. So I see the defenseman is kind of a wash. So if you look at Evander Kane for two pretty good prospects and a first-round pick, I don't mind that at all. And maybe that might be, from Winnipeg's perspective, addition by subtraction as well. If he was as big of an issue in the dressing room as from outside the market, the perception is, then maybe that's an even better trade for Winnipeg from that perspective. Yet for Buffalo, maybe they're getting a guy coming in who's going to be really motivated now. You know, they have to wait till next year for it. But I think both teams are going to make it all right here.
Guy Flaming, TSN 1260 in Edmonton, joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, breaking down the trade this week that saw Zach Bogosian and Evander Kane head to Buffalo, of course, breaking down the prospects the Jets acquired and the rest of the prospect pool. Guy, this week, Craig Button, TSN, former Stars executive and Flames general manager, said that the Jets had the best farm system in the National Hockey League. Do you agree with that?
You know, it's funny because I was on a show on my station here in Edmonton about a week ago, and I was asked that question, and the first team that came to my mind was Winnipeg, and I'm a bit biased because WHL is in my backyard, and I see a lot of WHL players, and the Jets have drafted heavily from the Dub, and every year when I look back at the draft and I say who impressed me, the Jets for the last two or three years have been that team. So I would say I'd be shocked if anybody said they weren't a top five team for prospect depth. And it's the first one that came to mind for me, but, you know, I think Buffalo has a lot of good players, even after moving a couple guys. Chicago is deep, and there are other clubs as well, but I am a big fan of what the Winnipeg Jets have done at the draft, and I think they have, you know, when you have the goaltending depth that they do with, you know, Connor Hellebuck and Eric Comrie, you can trade a guy like Jason Kasdorf, who I still think is a quality goaltender, and you're trading from an area of strength, so you can address other positional needs in your organization by trade. And I just like the way Winnipeg drafts.
Guy, we have you on here, and we're talking about prospects, and potentially the prospect that excites Jets fans the most, and no offense to Josh Morrissey, is Nikolai Ehlers. And you look at how he's been playing this year, the crazy point streak. He's ninth in the QMJHL in scoring with Halifax. He's got 73 points right now in 38 games. And fans have gone a little bit bonkers. You know, I know Remus was retweeting him. He was, you know, changing sides that he was shooting in the middle of the game last night. And, you know, we've seen so many highlight reel goals from Nikolai Ehlers. Fans are really excited for him, hoping that he might even play for the Jets next year. What do you think Nikolai Ehlers' ceiling is?
I think he is going to be a fantastic player, to be honest with you. I think he can be a top-line guy. His speed is unbelievable, and you know what his offensive abilities are. I'm not good at NHL comparisons, but, you know, he's average to slightly below average size. I mean, I think he's still got room to fill out with some muscle and some mass, but at 6 foot, I mean, that's big enough to play. I mean, we've got 5'10 guys like Claude Giroux lighting up the league, so and Patrick Kane, guys like that. But I think he's going to be a speedster that can burn guys, catch defensemen going wide. He can beat guys one-on-one. I really think he could be, you know, 5-6 years from now, a top-10 scorer in the league. I think he's going to be a treat.
Now, Guy, sticking with small Jets prospects, what do you think about Nick Petan?
Nick Petan, I have a little bit more concern with, just because I think his skating is maybe above average. I don't think it's necessarily fantastic, and I think he needs to get stronger on his skates. But his vision is fantastic, and his hands are unbelievable. So I can see him making it to the NHL, and if he does, being an impact player. But he's not a checker, so if he's not playing in your top six, he's not going to play for you. And I wonder if he's a guy who is going to be an outstanding junior hockey player and a terrific American Hockey League guy who is maybe a bit of an in-betweener. He's either going to be that or he's going to be a star in the NHL. I don't think there's any it's one or the other.
Guy Flaming of TSN 1260 joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, breaking down the Jets prospect pool and some of the Jets acquisitions this past week from the blockbuster trade that saw the Jets deal Zach Bogosian and Evander Kane for Tyler Myers and company. Josh Morrissey, Guy, gets a ton there's a ton of chatter about him. Of course, the fans, Jets fans, get to see him play at the World Juniors, and some compare him or say that he's going to be the guy who moves in either behind Tobias Enstrom, or the fans who don't like Tobias Enstrom, that he can replace Tobias Enstrom eventually. What do you foresee for him? Is next year a year where you see him joining the NHL ranks, or still more development time required?
No, I think he's ready for the next step, and whether that means he starts on the farm or not, if he does, I don't think it'll be for long. he's a pretty mature guy for his age and sees the ice really well. He skates so well. And you remember the effectiveness he had in St. John's last year in the playoffs. I mean, he looked like he was ready for the next challenge. So, and I'm sure he was pretty disappointed not to stick as a pro this year, and he was kind of floating in Prince Albert, and then getting traded to Kelowna has given him a new lease on life, and he's looked a lot better. But I think Josh Morrissey could be ready for the NHL as early as next season, and you know whether he's going to be a top four guy, I think that's probably expecting too much, but. I think he's going to be a good player, and I wouldn't be surprised if he starts up there next year as well. I think he's Winnipeg's top defensive prospect. There is another guy I saw recently that the Jets have that I'm pretty happy with too. If I was a Jets fan,
Andrew Kopp is a player that you don't hear about as much in the Jets system. 2013 fourth round pick. He's playing for University of Michigan, point of game right now. He's from Michigan. What do you think his ceiling is? What can you tell us about him?
I think he's going to be a really strong two-way guy. I know in Michigan he has the ability to put up some points and has done that. I think he was up around a point per game last year as a sophomore in the NCAA. And last I checked, he was probably on pace, if not a little bit better pace than that this season with Red Berenson and the Michigan Wolverines. And, you know, he's maybe average size, 6.5, maybe 6'1", but he's thick and solid. He's a tough guy. I think he's really good in face-offs. I expect Andrew Kopp is probably going to be one of those character guys. I don't think he's going to be your top-line player, but might be a second, really good third-line guy. And a guy who really fits well with other players in the sense that he can, because if he's on your third line, he's going to play a different role than if he's on your second line, but he's going to be able to adapt to either role. I think Andrew Kopp, we saw him at the World Junior Championship as well, and played pretty well for the Americans a couple of years ago. I think that's another really skilled, or good pickup for the scouting staff in the middle of the round, or in the middle of the draft, a fourth round pick. That's just another reason why I thought the Jets have drafted so well in the last couple of years.
So, Guy, we didn't get a chance to finish your thought because you said there was a second defenseman that you really like. So who is that second defenseman?
It's Tucker Poolman playing in North Dakota. I had a chance to go down there in the middle of January and watch them play against Duluth. And he's getting the Dustin Byfuglien treatment. He's a defenseman who can play forward. And the weekend I was there, that's what they had him doing, was playing forward. And he's a big, strong, physical guy. And he was putting guys through the boards. And he was creating offensive chances, though, as well. And he was one of the guys that stood out for me the whole weekend. And I think the Jets have a late-round steal there.
Well, the Jets fans will like that sort of effort from their defensemen/forwards.
Yeah, for sure.
The final question, Claude Noel is over in Vancouver now coaching the Giants in the WHL. How is he faring in the junior ranks?
Well, the team is slightly above 500, and I actually just had him on the Pipeline show not that long ago when we were talking about what the transition has been for him. And you know, he coached a couple of years in the OHL, but that's two decades ago, and times have changed, not just in terms of junior hockey and the mentality of junior players, but the game has changed a lot. So he's kind of learning on the go, he admitted, and I know when he took over, the team went on a big run. I think they had 7 or 8 games where it was winning or picking up points at least, and then they went in a bit of a lull, and they're kind of on the playoff bubble right now, trying to get back into the final playoff spot. But I know that the atmosphere from the people around the club that I've spoken with, that he's changed the atmosphere and the attitude. But he admitted as well that he had to kind of crack the whip on some guys to break them out of maybe a sense of entitlement. So that might still be a work in progress, but I think if he's there for the long term, I think he is a coach that the players are starting to understand how to play for and what he expects. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if the Giants find their way back into the playoff picture this year.
Guy Flaming, host of the Pipeline Show on TSN 1260. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Fellas, anytime. Appreciate it.
Great information there. Jets fans got to be very encouraged by a very knowledgeable guy, Guy Flaming, of course, talking about the prospect pool and how many guys, not only top-end guys, but guys are able to get in the mid-rounds who will help the depth of the organization. Speaking of depth, the depth lines are an issue for the Jets, some would say. We're going to talk about candidates, trade possibilities, who the Jets can bring in, maybe what they give up. Less so what they give up, but more so who they can bring in, as he's got a list that he has compiled. He has forewarned me. It is long and detailed.
Well, it's not that long. I got some guys.
I wanted to, Can you not at least let the fans or listeners wait till after the break to hear how long the list is?
Richie, go to break. I want to eat some more pizza.
Back after this.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Ten to two in the afternoon on Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollack sitting in for the host Drew Mindell, joined in the studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manouk of LegalCurve.com, and Michael Remus. This segment's brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online, www.royalsports.me.
Richie, some unfortunate news coming out of Dallas. Mike Hyka, who is a good friend of the show, Dallas Morning News, tweeting out that Stars GM Jim Nill has updated the Tyler Seguin injury status. Looks like he's going to be out for 3 to 6 weeks. So it's unfortunate news for Dallas Stars and their fans. You know, he was clipped by Dmitry Kulikov last night. The Stars won the game. Kulikov was kicked out of the game.
He's got an in-person hearing.
I think he might get 5 games for that one.
Well, in-person, yeah, likely probably get about 5 games. And it hits low. And I don't know if it was late, but it was low. It was close to being late, but it was certainly low.
Kulikov's been suspended before a couple times, hasn't he?
You know, I don't recall, but it's odd. It was going on in Florida yesterday. You know, of course, the Stars win, and we talked about the Central Division teams always winning, but complete mayhem with Sean Bergenheim, not on your list, is he? But Gerard Gallant, again, he doesn't play in Winnipeg, so there's not as much controversy when you're not
playing.
I
really like Gerard Gallant.
Big city, but he says about his reason for not playing Sean Bergenheim, if he gave me 100%, he'd be playing tonight.
I mean, Sean Bergenheim, if you look at his career, he's been very inconsistent. And you're talking about, he's not particularly he's got some speed. He's got some goal scoring ability, but he's not a guy that necessarily excites me at this point of his career. No, as far as a guy,
I'm not saying that he has to, but boy, that comment basically saying, "Hey, this guy's not giving it his all." Ooh, that's interesting. I mean, you don't hear that very often.
Well, what a difference that you would, because you can't see. I mean, the whole thing is with Paul Maurice when he came in here. He said, "I'm not airing my dirty laundry with you guys." You know, it's to the media. And Gerard Gallant has no problem saying that to the media. And Bergenheim responded saying, "I've spoken to the assistant coaches. I've asked them if there's anything more I could do." Like, they're having a war of words in the newspaper. I mean, that's just a terrible situation. I mean, but it's a very rare thing. You don't generally see the teams doing that where, it's a lot less public. It might happen, obviously, but it's a lot less overt in the way it happens. So it's very interesting what's going on right now in Florida.
We don't have a drum roll here. But you have
Do we, Remus? 1 second.
Remus could pull up a drum roll or a sushi roll. We're not sure which one he's going to pull up first, but maybe a hot dog. But in any event, we have a list of some players that you consider that the Jets possibly could be interested in come the trade deadline.
Drum roll, please.
Well, again, and I mean, that's... Okay, Remus, turn it off. Again, this is, to me, more so that not players that, because they're pending UFAs or might be trade bait, these are players that I think would be good fits for the Winnipeg Jets. Just to be clear.
Is Tyler Seguin on this list?
No, yeah, exactly. No, but Richie, as you know, as opposed to the TSN lists that are compiled that have Daniel Winnick, Cody Franzen, Antoine Vermette,
by the
guys.
Way, it's like the worst list ever of talent. I mean, none of these guys are top six guys except for two or three of them.
For me, they're not players that excite me that much. But to me, the Jets have and I think you'd agree with this, even though they have some voids maybe on the left side defense, you might want to acquire someone. I think right now they're pretty set on defense and goal. So to me, it's the left wing spot on the third line.
100%.
And then that allows Chris Thorburn, and I think Chris Thorburn's done a good job. We don't have to talk about this. I'm his biggest fan, but I think that allows him to go to the fourth line.
On the right wing, and then that allows Puliuso to be in the press box. If you want to play him, against a physical team, sure, but it allows you to play the guys where they ought to be playing.
Right, and there's always the chance that Joel Armia or somebody like that gets called.
Sure,
These are some guys to me that I think are better fits for that third line left winger spot. And again, I'm not saying there's a good chance that these guys are acquired, but to me, these guys are a better fit. I look at a guy like Matt Calvert on the Columbus Blue Jackets, a guy that I believe has one more year left on his contract, or might be in the second year of, last year, second year of his second contract. He's 25 years old, so he might be a pending RFA, Richie. Maybe
he's a pending RFA.
So guy that played with the Brandon Wheat Kings, he's a Manitoba boy. The guy has unbelievable work ethic, and a guy that I think would be a perfect fit on that left line. Adds a little bit more of a goal scoring ability. Left side of the third line. A guy that put up big time numbers when he was a junior player. Obviously hasn't put up as big numbers, but he's a guy that, you know, on average can definitely get you hopefully 10 goals. So
what does he cost you?
If we're talking a guy like Matt Calvert, I think pending RFA, you'd have to think that. You might, and I think Columbus really likes him, by the way. He plays sometimes on the second, third line. I think you'd think if you're only giving up a draft pick, it might cost you a second or
probably cost you a second to Matt Calvert, who you plug into that spot as. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good suggestion. I don't have no issue with that. I mean, you mentioned some of his strong suits. He certainly would be an upgrade over what the team has. Who else do you have?
I have three other players here, and I guess we'll go through them.
So far, you're one for one. I like the first suggestion.
Teddy Purcell is a guy that he's got a couple years left on his contract. He's actually been playing on the top line. Obviously, the Edmonton Oilers are pretty light here. Teddy Purcell's a guy that had 20 odd goals, 50 points on the Tampa Bay Lightning. He hasn't been able to duplicate that. He's, I believe, 29 years old. He's a guy that I think has 2 years left on his contract. Again, I don't have it in front of me, but he's a guy from the Maritimes as well. He's a guy, to me, you know, he's a shooter. And I think if you put him on the third line there, if it's with Adam Lowry and Michael Frolik, I think he might be a good fit there. And again, I think you're talking, if David Perron was traded to the Pittsburgh Penguins for a first rounder and Rob Klinkhammer, I think, you know, if you're talking about a player like Teddy Purcell, you might have to give up maybe that late first rounder, second rounder, maybe a prospect. But I don't think you'd have to give up a top prospect or a roster player.
To me, Purcell doesn't fit what they need as in that he's not – I mean, he's a scoring type guy. He's soft, though. I mean, he's not a great skater. And I don't know if you want to add – this team, Drew Stafford and Teddy Purcell totally changed the outlook of this team, and I wonder if it makes him a little bit easier to play against. Mm. But I see that he certainly adds skill, no question. Who else is on your list?
Another guy that I have on the list that I think would be near impossible to pry away on the Ottawa Senators is Mike Hoffman. This is a guy that has unbelievable speed.
Great skill.
They were saying he was the fastest guy in the AHL last year. I don't know if – you know, I still think he's one of the fastest guys. You know, he's having a career year, 18 goals for the Ottawa Senators. I believe he's in the second year of an entry-level deal, but a little bit different because he came into the NHL a little bit later.
Yep.
But a guy like Mike Hoffman, I think, you know, if you're able to – I think that's a first-round pick. I think you'd have to give up a first-round pick. I think he's a buy-high candidate because he's having the career year with the Ottawa Senators.
I think probably even more than a first-rounder, is he? Because, like, you have a young guy who's a really fast skater, has really good skills, handles the puck really well, sees the game well. You know he's already been able to score this much in the National Hockey League. Yeah, I think you're giving him more. He's cost-effective. Yeah.
But again, I'm trying to look at guys that I think have a little bit more skill and a little bit more goal-scoring ability than guys like, to me, Daniel Winnick, a guy who's got six goals, seven goals.
The Jets have been interested in the past. We're interested in the summer.
But again, Daniel Winnick's strengths are, you know, he's physical, but he's a guy's strengths are penalty killing. He's up top of the league in penalty. I don't know if the Jets need more penalty killers and guys like that. And again, he's a pending UFA, I believe.
He's a pending UFA on a one-year deal. So I know the Jets are interested in him, but let's look at the three guys you've mentioned. Calvert would be a guy that Columbus maybe apt to give up. They have some guys who could fill that spot. He's a pending RFA. They have to sign him. They've been giving big money to Foligno. They give Dubinsky big money. They got to sign some guys. They need to make some moves there. That's a good possibility.
I think the Jets would sign Calvert too.
Very possibly. Yes, exactly. And he's cost effective in the sense that you are going to, if you don't really want to sign him too long term, you can do arbitration with him. And if you don't like it, you can always move the guy. And, you know, he's a guy you can move. If you look at Hoffman, I don't see why Edmonton trades him. Ottawa trades him. Mm-hmm. Edmonton, Purcell, I can see Edmonton wanting to trade Purcell. I just don't know if you want to take on the money.
Yeah.
And
I think he makes 4 a year.
Yeah, he's just... Yeah.
3.5?
The problem with Purcell, as I said before, I think you change the outlook of the forward group too much. Mm-hmm. And you take on a longer-term commitment. Who's the fourth guy you have?
The other guy I had on there, I believe he's a pending UFA, is Lauri Korpikoski. a guy that I know.
I like that one.
Another guy that the Arizona Coyotes, he's done a nice job for them. He was drafted by the Rangers, as you know, Richie, of course, but he's played on the Coyotes
last. Don Maloney, I believe, was in New York when he was drafted by the Rangers.
Yeah. And he's a guy that, you know, he put up a couple of 17-goal season, 19-goal season, you know, 5 years ago with the Coyotes. He's got 6 goals this year. He's a guy to me, though, excuse me, I believe that he would add not only a little bit of an improvement in the goal-scoring department, but I think also he's a good guy, that good two-way game, and he's got the veteran leadership and all that. So to me, he was an interesting guy. And again, I'm looking a little bit outside of the box here, players that I think could add a little bit more than for example, a Daniel Winnick or a Sean Bergenheim. You know, I've heard Eric Condra thrown out there as well as a possibility. But to me, these are guys that I think really could add to the skill level of that.
Now, Korpikoski, sorry to interrupt, Desi, quickly, because we're up against the break here. Korpikoski is in the second year of a 4-year deal, 2.5 cap hit.
So I guess that makes him even, maybe you'd have to offer a little bit more because he's got the term.
Korpikoski and Calvert, I like both of those suggestions.
I like that you like those.
Yeah.
I did a little research.
No, I thought Dave's suggestions were also excellent that segment.
Couldn't get a word in edgewise.
Toronto Maple Leafs, of course, as he somehow, in a part of the show plan, has to put the Toronto Maple Leafs. Apparently, the board has approved blowing up the roster, which is shocking news. Because, you know, everybody wants to keep this roster intact. We're going to talk more about the train wreck that is the Toronto Maple Leafs after the break. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Board operator doing a terrific job here on TSN1290. Mr. Paul Stone, your host here, Mr.
Mandel. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN1290. Joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com and the aforementioned Michael Remus. I'm Richard Pollack, filling in as the host for Drew Mandel. On today's show, we're already 2 hours down, guys. 1 hour to go on Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day.
Drew who?
Drew who? Yeah, you know, I have texts, actually, before we read one of our have a sponsor read. Well, you know, we'll do that next segment. I have a text from the very capable and talented Matt Leibel of The Morning Show, The Big Show. This is what he texted me earlier today, during the show, in fact. Removing Drew from your show produces the same wonderful results as the Jets' power play when Tobias Enstrom was removed.
Wow.
Shot across the bow, not shot through the heart there.
Yeah, that's a first cousin battle right there. I mean, those are two guys who are going to have to meet at the center table, and they might not be so friendly after that comment by Matty Leibel.
I was once in a car with Drew and Leibel back from Minneapolis. I think that was the year. Did we see Springsteen that year?
We did, and in fact, I believe you were a part of the car that nobody else wanted to be in. All of your beards, and you had him showered, and you looked like guys who were going to have trouble crossing the border.
Right, that's when Leibel had like the rabbinical beard. It was huge.
And you were like in a sweatshirt, and the car was dirty, and we were getting coffees on the way out, and I looked at you, and I said, well, the way you're acting right now, there's a very little chance the sketchy behavior you're getting across the border.
I believe what exactly happened is Richard and I got in the car. We looked around. We said, Ezzy's not here. Let's go.
And we said to Ezzy that there's a pretty good chance Ezzy's going to be taken into the second room at the border. And
sure enough,
we were in the car ahead of you. And we got through the border. And we looked behind. And you guys got the wave into the old garage.
Rich, I
got
to tell you, driving back across two states with Leibel and Drew, and they're bickering and they're arguing. They were arguing about baseball and arguing about football and who's this? Is this guy a franchise quarterback and all this? But by the time we were, you know, an hour or two into that road trip, I was thinking about just walking back from Minnesota.
As he actually tried to jump out of the car and roll.
People needed to see this car, though. There was no chance that the border guard was letting any of these three Yahoos
yeah,
through.
Yeah, I agree.
You had Drew, you know, trying to speak for you guys. It was just trouble.
Right, and you know, Drew, you know, we got to the border and Drew started talking about American politics. And Drew, what are you doing here? I just want to get past the border here. And then, yeah, Leibel had that big beard. And, you know, I shouldn't speak because I have a beard right now. But, I don't think I'm ever going on a road trip with those guys again.
Toronto Maple Leafs have, they're always in the spotlight. People are talking about, you know, who wants Phil Kessel and who wants Dion Phaneuf. And generally, probably the answer is nobody. But there are teams that I assume will have some interest based on what the compensation is and what it'll require and, you know, the how much of the contract the Leafs can retain as part of a deal. But Ray Ferraro spoke about the Leafs, TSN's Ray Ferraro, of course, spoke about the Maple Leafs and the situation they're in this week, and we have some audio over that clip.
It's one thing to love a place, and, you know, as he says he does, but if they come to him and say, hey, look, I got a deal to one of the 20 teams that isn't on your list, like, what are you going to do? There's no point worrying about it. The hardest part is that everybody tells you that, don't worry about it, but it's impossible not to worry about it. It's impossible not to think about it. And I'm certain it's had an impact on how the life has been sucked out of these guys for the last little bit here. I mean, they've just looked like their hearts aren't in it, like they're vacant. And Kessel would be no different than that. And I'm sure you look around and you hear now it's a rebuild, and I'm sure it's crossed his mind. I mean, it would cross mine. Wow, what if they move me to a team that's pretty good? Because a bad team's not trading for Phil Kessel, I don't think.
Right.
I think because likely the teams that are among the worst, they're already on his no-trade list.
Yeah.
So I would think it would certainly be a step up competitive-wise, and who knows what city it is, but you don't have any control over that anyway.
It's a disaster, really, in Toronto. And Catholic Kelly of Globe and Mail this week reported, and I can read the specific quote, Mr. Shanahan, speaking of Brendan Shanahan, his lieutenants have now finally received a broad mandate from ownership, which is, of course, the MLSC, and that's the Rogers Bell partnership there for the ownership of this team, to scorch as much earth as they see fit in order to return the Leafs to contention, according to two sources familiar with that meeting, which is a board meeting that they had. So, we know now, guys, that the Leafs have approval to, and I'm. Is anybody surprised that they have approval to do the score? There's really no alternative here. They have to blow this thing up and start over again. And all anybody wants to talk about is how you do that. And the criticism is to a point now, and the players it's not fun for them to be there. And everybody just looks unhappy. You know, Peter Horacek this week going out and obviously using an expletive to describe the team and their lack of caring. Again, so when a coach talks about a team's lack of caring, I mean, that's a different level. Where do you start? Ezzy, what do you do here if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs? So you're starting from the top. What would be your first move, your first three moves if you're Brendan Shanahan?
Well, I think, and that's not talking about possibly finally letting go Dave Nonis.
Right.
I think if we're just talking about, and who, again, we've said, along with Randy Carlyle at the beginning of the season, was a lame duck. Because we don't know if Brendan Shanahan himself is going to take over general manager, or if, you know, he's going to bring in someone else. But I think if you're looking at this team, Richie, you know, a lot of the guys that are on top of the TSN, you know, most tradable list are guys to watch. Daniel Winnick, Mike Santarelli, Cody Franson, all pending UFAs. That's not going to change that dressing room and change the overall dynamic of this team. Because when you're talking about Daniel Winnick and you're talking about Mike Santarelli, both of those guys were just one-year signees.
Absolutely.
So you're talking about Cody Franz and a guy that, you know, I think is desirable. Ken Daniels was on in the first hour talking about how a team like Detroit might be interested in Cody Franz, and I think Cody Franz will be traded. But let's talk about the big guys, and it's kind of tough to trade Dion Phaneuf at this point because he's injured. But if you're talking Phil Kessel, James Van Riemsdyk, Joffrey Leupel, you're talking about these Nazem Kadri, obviously they're not going to trade all these guys. Let's stick to Phil Kessel, and I think we're going to play that clip of Phil Kessel a little bit later. But Phil Kessel.
You want to hear it now? You want to hear this is Phil Kessel talking about playing in Toronto?
Do you find yourself as you go through this stretch worrying a bit about future for yourself, for the team?
No. You know, I go where they want me. I love Toronto, but it's not here, it's not here.
Lots has been made about the comment, if it's not here, it's not here. And on this point in time, doesn't he have to have that mindset? I mean, you can say what you want about Phil Kessel. We know what his drawbacks are defensively and physically. We know what his strengths are. Scores goals, as well as almost anybody in the league. But what else do they expect him to say at this point? I mean, this team is in a complete and total spiral, downward spiral. And the truth is, I mean, he's been a part of that, no question about it. But the scrutiny is reached, like, almost unmatched levels.
I mean, it's Toronto, right? I mean, that's just what you're going to get with the media there. I mean, if people think Winnipeg is bad,
oh God,
whatever that means, whatever bad is, however that's defined.
Critical, I guess, would be the kind of the interpretation there,
fine,
right?
Fine. So if then Toronto takes it to the next level.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, it's got to be tough. Like, I watch these guys and, like, I mean, think about it. They're in the city where TSN is shot, and literally every night their top guys are all on the 100%. Like, I think Right now, Dreger has them at like 85% on being moved. Now they're all up to 100. He's like, basically, it's at 100% for a lot of these guys. So, you know, I mean, how do you do that? And you have to go in, and it's not like there's three or four. You're not in Florida where there's two or three guys who cover the team. There's probably 30 guys in these media scrums. So you have to sit there, and a lot of times these scrums, guys are going from one to the other. That's so they start asking the same questions. So you have just answered a question about whether you want to stay in Toronto and what you want the team to do, and then some other reporter comes by who you know, legitimately hasn't had an opportunity to talk to you because, again, those scrums are so big, and then says, so what do you think about your chances of staying in Toronto are? So you're answering the same question sometimes twice in the same, you know, press scrum. I mean, these guys have to be just sick of it at this point, because what else can they do? I mean, obviously they can go out and play hard and try and win, but like they're not doing that. And obviously it wasn't just Randy Carlyle. Folks wanted to throw this all onto Randy Carlyle, because have they won what, one game since they fired him? So I mean, like this is bigger than Randy Carlyle, and maybe Randy Carlyle should be commended for getting this team as many wins as they did early on, because. You know,
I think this is. I mean, my personal opinion is Dave Notis is on his way out. I would replace him immediately. Even if it meant just letting him go, and then whoever you have in charge in the interim making the moves now, because if you don't think Nonis should be in charge moving forward, why do you think he should be responsible for making the trades of these
100%
of these pending UFAs? Okay, now if you want to bring in the guy right away to fill that spot, okay, great. If you want to maybe bring in Babcock in the offseason to do a job and maybe have the same personnel, maybe you have whatever it may be, you have to me relieve Dave Nonis of his duties and then trade Franzen, Winnick, Santarelli all right away. All your pending UFAs, you get whatever you can for him. I mean, Franzen, if you want to talk about re-signing him, okay. But, I mean, I don't know if he's going to get more or less than what they've offered him, and we don't really know for sure what the contract details will have. I think if you're talking about a guy like Phil Kessel, you want the permanent guy in charge, whoever that may be, to be the one making that deal, because that will affect your franchise for a long time. Santarelli, Winnick, those kind of moves are not going to – I mean, sure, you get the depth, thirds, fourth, whatever round pick you're going to get. I mean, most people can do that, but I don't think you want Dave Nonis to do that. I think you want an interim guy who will probably be part of management moving forward, having a say in those things. But the big moves, I would want it to be the new GM, whoever that is. But Brendan Shanahan is going to start taking responsibility for these things. And I know he didn't put the roster together, but the longer you're there, the more responsibility you have for the way. I mean, Kevin Chevalier-Off didn't make a ton of moves in Winnipeg, but the longer you have and you keep the core that you have, then you're responsible for it.
Right, and based on that thinking, the likelihood of Phil Kessel being moved before the draft is low.
I think so. And the cap ramifications. Sure, Evander Kane moves here, but very few teams were able to, you know, he was limited. I think he wasn't going to the West, and he wasn't going to playoff teams in the East. So they were pretty limited. Buffalo stepped up to the plate. That's a rare occasion.
Right, and Ray Ferraro mentioned in that interview on TSN 1050 that Phil Kessel indeed does have a limited no-trade clause, which means he obviously has already picked the teams that he could possibly get traded to. But I think if, you know, we hear about this, you know, Brendan Shanahan and Dave Nonis, I think more so Brendan Shanahan, because as you mentioned, Richie, there's a good chance that Dave Nonis isn't part of management going forward. I think Brendan Shanahan has been evaluating this team and knowing that there was a small chance that this team was going to make the playoffs, and if they were going to make the playoffs, they were going to squeak in and most likely get defeated in the first round. That's what I believe. So I think that he's thought about this. But, you know, back to Phil Kessel and his comments after the last Leaf game. You know, these guys are professionals. Kessel signed the long-term contract with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I have no doubt that Phil Kessel wanted to stay in Toronto, and I'm not saying that he doesn't like living in Toronto and playing for Toronto, but just look at the way this team has really followed the play of Phil Kessel. And, you know, you hear Tyler Bozak might be, you know, included in that as well. But just sticking with Phil Kessel on that top line with Bozak and Van Riemsdyk, because they're not going to trade everybody. They're going to have to keep some guys.
If you're trading Bozak, don't you want it to be the guy who's going to be in charge of the organization moving forward?
Right. But, you know, the point being that I think, Richie, that Kessel, I think it's affecting him. And he's a guy that, you know, we've talked about this before. He's a guy that, you know, has in the past has had confidence issues. He's had problems with the mental aspect of the game. I'm talking about confidence issues and prolonged scoring slumps. At times, Phil Kessel, when he's on, Phil Kessel is an elite player. And we all know that. He's been top 10 in the NHL in scoring before. We know that.
Elite skater, elite shooter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Defensive side of the game definitely needs work. And it might never get better at this point in his career, Richie. But, you know, how can it not have an effect on you when all you hear about is how bad you're playing and the jerseys are thrown on the ice. And as you mentioned, Rich, it really has been just an awful year for the entire city and organization. It just seems to go from bad to worse with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I think maybe if you're looking at, you know, what you can do to improve this organization, trading Phil Kessel might be something you want to consider.
And again, no, I think the new GM is going to try and trade a bunch of these guys. But again, the new GM has to be in charge. That is, to me, that's the big issue. And who wants that job? Of course, the GM job is different than the coach, whatever it may be. Because the GM, look at Brendan Shannon. He's been the president of hockey operations, hardly talks to the media at all. Sure, there's a ton of pressure. Doesn't have to engage the media as much as Brian Burke did in that position before, general manager position. Again, that job in Toronto will be big money job for the GM. And it will be pressure, but it will be somebody, and there's more than one person, a lot of them are going to love the idea. Candidates are going to love the idea of being the savior of a team that hasn't won the cup since 1967. Seton bought in Chicago with the Cubs, you know, Theo Epstein, if you want to use a baseball reference. There are different options for sure. And if you have the ability to be the savior, you're likely going to take your chances on that. Never mind the fact the compensation will be great. When we come back, David Manuk of LegalCurve.com may have been in Las Vegas, so he's going to be just the guy to ask about the attention that the NHL and the prospect of hockey becoming the first pro sports league to start a team in Vegas, and how that was received, and what the chances are of us seeing an expansion. Dear God, expansion! I mean, can you believe expansion in the National Hockey League? That would be a disgrace. But we're going to talk about that possibility after the break. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
This segment's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Legal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat it in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Yeah, we had a fan that was telling us that they were in from Minnesota. And then they went and checked out Bernstein's Deli because of the commercial and, you know, our relationship with them. So that's great to hear that, you know, we have American friends that are eating at the deli.
Absolutely. I think that was great. You didn't get invited, though?
No, I wasn't invited. I was there, though.
It was going to be a deli meet while eating deli
meat.
Well done, David.
Thank you. This week, the attention of the National Hockey League somewhat diverted to Las Vegas, although it's kind of been an odd unveiling of the possibility of a team being located there. And we hear it'll be an expansion team likely because the owners will get a bunch of money up front. The expansion fees are not shareable as part of the collective bargaining agreement. But David, you were in Las Vegas this week, so I wanted to get your perspective, a unique perspective in this regard, that you were in Las Vegas during this so-called ticket drive. Well, not so-called. There was a ticket drive.
Did Dave get season tickets in Las Vegas?
I have tickets.
and we should qualify that people were being asked to fork over $150 to $900 US to reserve season tickets. It's kind of an odd arrangement. Not certainly kind of unlike Winnipeg was here, because Winnipeg really knew we were going to get a team.
Right.
Although there wasn't yet Board of Governor approval, if I recall correctly. In any event, what was Las Vegas like this past week? Not all the fun, but was there any talk about the NHL at all?
Well, it's interesting. I went down as the illegalcurve.com correspondent. Specifically, no, not at all. But you know what? It was interesting. I didn't realize that they were even talking about it. And that's good and bad because I was on the Strip. And so, you know, that's not the people they're trying to appeal to, because those are people from out of town who are just visiting Las Vegas. But I still thought it was a little curious that there, because apparently it was all unveiled at New York, New York. I walked by New York, New York, and there was nothing. There was no mention. I think I only, specifically because I saw something on Twitter, which is obviously hockey-centric, so I would have seen that there were a couple of hockey tweets related to the ticket drive in Las Vegas. But in Las Vegas proper, and I went down, to be honest with you, I went into Fremont, like old downtown Vegas and stuff like that. There wasn't really a lot of talk. I mean, I talked to people randomly and stuff like that. Nobody was really talking about it, but I suspect that's because the people that they're trying to seek out are people who are residents, obviously, of Las Vegas, not people who are just there for a conference or for vacation. But if you're asking me,
is the team going to succeed based on the people visiting?
Well, I think no, I don't actually. I think what'll happen is it'll have to succeed based on the residents of Las Vegas, and it'll be infused by the people that are visiting, similar to what Florida gets with all the snowbirds and stuff like that. That would be my only way of seeing that as a really viable option.
See, Richie, I think it's going to be a combination, and that's why season ticket holders are so important and were so important when Winnipeg, we got our NHL team back. That's why there was the drive to 13,000. See, like, I think for the long-term success of the NHL in Las Vegas, there's obviously going to have to be bums in the seats, right?
Right.
There's going to have to be season ticket holders. They're going to have to, if not, sell out that arena. Which
there
is
are a lot of bums and homeless people in Vegas, so right. I mean, they could fill the seats.
But you know what I mean, Dave? Like, if the arena is going to be, let's say, 18,000, which I believe it is, whatever. 17,000. So 17,000, Richie. Not every arena in the NHL is sold out, which we've seen this year in Florida, unfortunately, even though they've done a good job, I think, to turn that franchise around. I think, Richie, if you're talking about the long-term success, this team is going to have to continue to have those season ticket holders. And I think, regardless if you're in favor of NHL expansion, which I'm not, Rich, I got to be honest, but
if you watch a hockey game in the National Hockey League this season and you tell me you're in favor of expansion, I would like to know which game you watch.
Right. And as far as, you know, Gary Bettman, Bill Daly, you know, the NHL owners go, they obviously don't care what I think. They are concerned with
dollars.
So if they have the ability to get the expansion fee, which is a significant amount of money, Richie, then they'll do it. And you know, you look at it and they've already sold or have commitments for 5,000 deposits. You know, you're starting to see that
let me ask you, is that convincing?
I think it would be a lot more convincing if they had 1,000.
Yeah, 10,000, you mean?
No, 1,000 out of 10,000. They're 5,000. So, I mean, they're already halfway to their goal.
It is already.
I'm just saying, I think it's when you have Gary Bettman in Las Vegas in front of a podium that says Vegas wants hockey, that means Bettman wants hockey in Las Vegas. That means Gary Bettman has now put his name to this and wants this to happen. So to me, again, I think that I would rather see a franchise that's struggling relocate in an ideal situation, Rich. And I'm not saying that we want Arizona or Florida to struggle, but if you look at Arizona and you look at Florida, there's still thousands of empty seats. So I know that ownership has solidified in these markets. That's not to say, though, that these teams are still making money. Florida's not making money this year. Arizona, the franchise, is not making money this year. So I think you still want to take care of that before you start expanding. That's all I'm saying, Rich.
And the VegasWantsHockey.com, you're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, and we're talking about Las Vegas and the prospect of Las Vegas getting a team, whether expansion or a franchise, moving. It's been obviously the talk of the league this week, really, and for the past about year or so. If you go on VegasWantsHockey.net, and we'll send out the link, you can put your name in, you can put out the section and the arena, in part of the arena you want to sit, you put your credit card in.
I just put your credit card in, by the way, Rich.
Yeah, I want to read you the description on the
site. You've got P1s.
Las Vegas has deserved a professional franchise, sports franchise, for years. Now is the time to make the dream a reality. Help bring Vegas its first NHL team. Place your season ticket deposit today. Now, I don't know. First off, they had a press conference this week that had Gary Bettman and Bill Daly in front of signs that said VegasWantsHockey.net. David, sitting in the studio, was there this week, and I had no clue that was even taking place.
Right, but I don't think that's the point.
And he runs a hockey website.
No, but I don't think that's the point. I think the point that Gary Bettman and Bill Daly are there, they're saying that they want it there.
Oh, I don't know the NHL
wants to go there.
It doesn't
matter what the
fans want. Well, I mean, but it does when they have to actually make it work.
No, I'm saying, the Vegas fans, I'm not saying, but I'm saying your average Canadian hockey fan, I think really, Richie, your question earlier is important, and it's one worth exploring. What will the average, well, not the average, but will there be enough walk-up fans? So we're talking about Canadians that are in Vegas, and, you know, Dave was just in Vegas. Richie, you and I, Remus, we're all going to be in Vegas in March.
Yeah,
Drew's in Vegas now.
I am too.
Canadians, well, Dave, but, you know, you're in Vegas every week, so it doesn't count. But you're talking about, will the Canadians in Vegas, not only the Canadians in Vegas, but will the 600 or so thousand people in Vegas, will those people go to games? As we know, Vegas is a transient city, which has been pointed out by Cathal Kelly in the Globe and Mail.
He does point that out. So, less than a quarter of the Nevada residents were born in Nevada.
Right. And so you're in a situation where, okay, you might have 10,000 season ticket holders, but will you be able to fill up those 7,000 other seats?
I you know, the one thing I should say, I should qualify with my statement, is that I did see the arena progression. Like, I saw from, because I walked by the New York and it's right between the New York and Monte Carlo, kind of the back end.
Mm-hmm.
And they did, I think I recall seeing like a Vegas Wants Hockey sign kind of in the foreground where they're behind, and they're doing this massive construction. Now they're doing massive construction in Vegas all the time, right? So, but what I was going to say is that it is convenient in terms of accessibility. It's very close to the strip. It's in a good spot. And the truth is also, if you're a resident, it's off of the freeway. So you don't have to, it's not like you're traveling through a lot of traffic. Like I went to a college basketball game, which was played out of the Thomas and Mack building where UNLV plays. And it was a little bit more time consuming to get there because you're not going in off the freeway. You're going off just these smaller residential streets.
I guess the other question I have is, I mean, you have to package these with the hotels and such. But my other question, I 100%. Guess, would be, was somebody going to pay to get into the arena and watch a game just for fun, not really care, and pay $10 for a beer when you can play poker and probably get a drink for free?
They're going to have to be doing some serious promo to get, because the truth is, as someone who's just, like I said, who goes to Vegas a lot, there's a lot of options. And there's a lot of options and a lot of things. Like, so do you want to commit to going to 41 hockey games?
And the games start early there, like, because people aren't getting started in Vegas at 7 o'clock.
Well, that could be their advantage, actually.
Maybe.
Because the truth is, even actually with the basketball game I went to, you went early enough, it's over by 9:30, you really have your whole night to kind of go out still.
Sure, but yeah, that's fine when you have all the traffic on the weekends, but on a weekday,
right?
I don't know. I mean,
I'm with you guys. I'm not super in favor of adding another team to the NHL. I think it's just going to further dilute the talent. But
I mean, if you watch Carolina Panthers play and some of these teams play, you can't tell me that our expansion is necessary. I mean, even let's be, you know, with due respect again, Anthony Peluso, a guy who works hard. I mean, these guys aren't, to me, you know, top 12 guys in the NHL. And then there's a lot of teams, and they're going to have space. And again, you see teams come through the National Hockey League, and you can go over some of the teams. You know, Edmonton's going to be in town on Monday night. You watch, look at Edmonton's roster. You tell me if there's a need for expansion, especially the defense in this league.
Richie, before we go to break, getting a tweet from a longtime listener of Illegal Curve saying that they just saw Drew on the Vegas Strip, and he was in front of a podium that says Drew wants buffet.
I got to leave it there, don't I?
Absolutely.
When we come back, we're going to go through the National Hockey League, NHL news and notes. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
+234, Saturday afternoon, Valentine's Day. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, part of Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN1290, home of the Winnipeg Jets. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, who will be back on Wednesday on NHL Midweek. Joined in studio, of course, by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. He's done a great job with the IllegalCurve.com website. Although, if it's .com, it couldn't be anything other than a website, I guess.
Good point.
And Michael Remus has been doing a great job. We get a little Zeppelin there. He's been doing the love theme song so far, and he had a romantic hot dog for breakfast, and we can only imagine what Michael has in store for his special someone tonight, but we won't get into that on the air.
Him and Huss are actually going to Thermia Spa.
You're on a roll right now, Andy.
Well, I'm not on the roll up the rim to win. I'm 0-4 now. What does it take to win this thing?
Hey, what are your percentage chances on that? I'd love to know what your percentage chances on that.
I've kept track of mine the last couple of years. I say 1 in 10. I don't know what the official one is, but I feel like 1 in 10 is, if you can get that, that's fine.
Remus, true or false, you once had a Tim Hortons roll up the rim to win spreadsheet?
True.
I think I tweeted it last year.
That was before he, of course, had a girlfriend. This segment's brought to you by Not Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at notautocorp.com.
That was a good one. Says the guy who doesn't have a girlfriend.
By the way, Ezzy, if you're going to get a car, not Auto Corp, which I suggest you do, if you've seen
it. Yeah, I want
a
couple. I want like 3 or 4.
You have your Legal Curve sticker on your car. You need to ask that it be taken off of the Civic you have.
You mean the Rolls Royce?
Sorry. News and notes, and if Remus has a bumper, we'll do it right now.
NHL news and notes.
Interesting rumor this week that comes out, and I think there's some validity to it. The Montreal Canadiens have apparently put Lars Eller, he's got term on his contract, and he's getting paid a significant amount of money, 3.5 a year, I believe, and Alexei Emelin, 4.1 a year. Both guys who've signed contracts in a fairly recent past are on the market. First off, I mean, this intrigues me. because, I mean, I know the Habs have obviously had a great year, and Carey Price has been just tremendous for them. And, you know, obviously a bunch of other players that they have been quality guys. Galchenyuk taking the next step. Subban's great. But, Ezzy, are you surprised that both of these guys, well, you know, are you surprised that either of these guys are on, and of course, both of these guys on the trade market, apparently?
Yeah, I am, Rich. And I know Alexa Amlin had some injury problems last year. But he's a guy that has been a big part of the Montreal Canadiens defense. Emlyn is one of the guys that really allowed them to move Josh Georges, and along with younger defensemen like Nathan Beaulieu and Jared Tinordi, who might not be in a position just quite yet, but I think they think they're close. But, you know, Richie, look at the standings right now. The Montreal Canadiens, they've won 7 of their last 10 games. You know, they're in first place in the Eastern Conference right now, even though it's very close, tied with Tampa Bay in points. But you've got the Islanders and the Penguins and the Red Wings that are right behind them. But you talk about a guy like Lars Eller, you know, speaking of Nikolaj Ehlers, is another guy that's from Denmark. But Lars Eller, has had a tough year this year. You know, he's only got 16 points there in 49 games. He's kind of fallen into a bit of the doghouse with Michel Therrien. But he's a player that last year, playing with Galchenyuk and Gallagher on the wings, was a big part of the reason why they went to the Eastern Conference Finals. And you got to think, whether you're a team in the Eastern Conference or a team in the Western Conference, you'd have to think Lars Eller would be a guy that's really intriguing, especially for a team that might want to use him as an upgrade as a third line center.
And he's playing with Brandon Prest right now and Yuri Sakashin, and that's in a different role, obviously, Ezzy, than what you mentioned. I agree. I mean, it depends on what role you put the guy in and what you expect for him. He's a bigger guy. Does he always play big? You know, maybe not, but he certainly is a talented player. And then Alexi Emelin is a physical force back there. And I know he had the injuries, but you wonder if Montreal's dangling him. I mean, playing with the likes of Andre Markov, Sergei Gonchar, you know, veteran Russian guys, if he's not able to put it together there, it doesn't mean that because they're there, he has to be able to put it together. But it is suspect that you sign him long term, and he's got 4.1 per year cap hit for the next 3 years. You wonder if he can't make it work in Montreal the way that they play. You know, where would he make it work in a better fashion? That's a surprising one to me, because also Markov and Gonchar are older guys. I mean, obviously they're built around Subban, but it's not the youngest defense in the National Hockey League there.
And I think, Richie, I think, you know, you probably agree with this. You know, the Montreal Canadiens right now in first place in the East, even though they're tied in points with Tampa. But you look at Tampa, the Islanders, the Penguins. Montreal's biggest problem this year has been scoring goals. And we know Carey Price is one of the best goalies in the NHL, and P.K. Subban is only a couple of years removed from a Norris Trophy. So I think if you're Marc Bergevin, you're probably thinking, if you can maybe improve your goal scoring with a trade here before the trade deadline, I think it's unlikely that one of these guys get moved. I think it would be very unlikely if both of them get moved, maybe one of them. But for me, that would probably be the concern for the Montreal Canadiens right now. When you're talking about, I really like Tampa Bay and the Islanders, you know that. I think those two teams are going to have a good chance of being the top two teams remaining in the Eastern Conference, Rich. But I think if you're the Montreal Canadiens, that you could run into some goal-scoring problems, especially if some of those guys like Eller and Sakach aren't able to complement the Gallaghers, the Galchenyuks, the Pacioretty's.
If you look at the back end of the Habs, you know, and you look at, okay, Markov and Subban, yeah, Emelin and Gilbert, and Sergei Gonchar and Nathan Beaulieu. If you take Emelin out of that group, how hard are they to play against?
That's a good point.
You play against and I know the Boston Bruins, and the Habs played the Boston Bruins last week, and then the Habs were just outskating them. This is pure speed. The Bruins weren't able to keep up. And I know there aren't as many plodding teams, but if you were to say put St. Louis against Montreal, and I know St. Louis even in the finals, for example, and St. Louis would have trouble with the Habs speed because they skate better than the St. Louis does. But down low, if you get rid of a guy like Emelin, and if you don't replace him with a similar type of player, like, how are you controlling the boards in a long series?
It's a good point, Rich, because I think you're in a similar position that the Kings are looking without Slava Voynov, not just because they're both Russian defensemen.
Different needs on teams that have, you know, the Kings have an excess on size. They need the skilled puck-moving guy. The Habs have an excess on puck-moving guys. They need some size and toughness.
I think you make a good point, and that's probably, again, one of the reasons why they don't. Again, this is the time of year that you hear a lot of speculation.
But Bob McKenzie says they've been on the market for weeks, if not months. Who else knows better than Bob McKenzie?
It might have to do with, as you mentioned, Richie, the salary and the fact that these guys are under contract for a few more years, right?
Yeah.
So maybe that has to do with maybe looking at down the road. Do these guys factor into the long-term plans? Maybe
Eller,
they
I don't mind. Emelin seems surprising unless you're getting a similar player back.
and how everybody's looking for a guy like Alexei Amlin, right? Everybody's looking for that guy that can play in their top four, who's very good, responsible defensively. So
he's mean.
Yeah. So it's surprising.
Just only what last spring where Milan Lucic was trying to fight him in line, shaking hands. So, I mean, him and Dale Weiss, right? It was two guys there.
Yep.
That's the thing. You know, Martin Hanzel, as he transitioned quickly, Martin Hanzel, the Arizona Coyotes, had a terrible year, that team.
Yep.
Out for the season.
Yep.
I know, obviously, it doesn't affect Arizona's chances this year, well, chances of succeeding, because we know they're not going to make the playoffs. Do you see him as a long-term piece there?
I do, and I think I know where you're going with that, Rich.
He's a good player.
Yeah, he's a very good player.
Vancouver had interest in him,
apparently. He's got great size, and he's good defensively.
He's a great third-line center if that's where you're going to play him.
Yeah, a third-line center most likely on a good team, but on the Phoenix Arizona Coyotes, he's really a top center, him and Vermette. It's tough to say because the Coyotes, I think, know that they're not going to be a good team for a little while here. And they're going to get a top pick, and they've got guys like Max Domi and Henrik Samuelson, among others, coming up here. Mm-hmm. But those guys, I don't think, are going to turn around a team like, for example, a Nathan MacKinnon did with Colorado last year. So I think that Hanzel is one of those guys, if you decide to really rebuild, which they haven't done yet. I think Arizona is an interesting team because, you know, you hear Darren Drager and Bob McKenzie talking about Antoine Vermette actually might be staying and not getting moved before the trade deadline.
Drager says Vermette's going to command $5 or $6 million a year per season on a new deal. There's interest from the Habs, Bruins, Wings, Rangers, Ducks, and Avs. The asking price is a first round pick, a prospect, or a younger player. I mean, to me,
that's a high ask.
To me, I mean, first off, I mean, I'm not paying Antoine Vermette $6 million a year on a contract, and I'm not paying a first round pick and a prospect for him. So I would be surprised if he gets paid up to six in free agency, regardless of, you know, UFA status, of course. And I would be surprised if they get a first rounder and a really good draft pick. Maybe a first rounder and a really good prospect. Maybe a first rounder.
How many years
and a
does Hanzel have left on his contract, Rich?
I don't have that in front of me. And without cap geek now, it's a difficult task.
I see. To me, if you're the Phoenix again, I said it again, Arizona Coyotes, you still have to have some players there that to play. I mean, mm-hmm. you can't trade everyone. And, you know, we talked about a guy like Lauri Korpikoski. He might get traded. You hear Keith Yandle might get traded. Mm-hmm. I'd be shocked if Oliver Ekman-Larsson was traded because that's really the key piece of your defense there. So I don't know. I think especially with this injury, Hanzel, we could probably agree, isn't getting traded before the trade deadline. But I don't know if they even trade him next year because of the fact that he would be their top center, especially without Antoine Vermette.
Hanzel will be in the fourth year of a five-year deal.
Right. So, I mean, again, do you maybe wait to trade him next summer?
And make him just over three. I mean, he's got a reasonable cap hit, right? So, I mean, yeah, you can get a return for him. But Sean Burke was on this show. Goaltending coach, part of management there in Arizona, has said they haven't drafted well enough. That's the biggest problem. I mean, where's Brandon Gormley? How much longer are they going to wait for Brandon Gormley? So you're going to see them probably trade Keith Yandelez, probably Antoine Vermette. But as you mentioned, the guys that they have coming through, I mean, it can't be like Edmonton where you have all these young guys with not insulated by veterans. You're going to be in trouble.
You have to have some veteran NHL forwards in your top six, or you're assuring yourself you're going to finish in the bottom five of the NHL for the next 2 years.
Which you may want to do this year, but how long can you do it for is a question. When we come back, it's already the last segment of the show coming up, guys. Gone by quick on Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Last segment of the show on Saturday.
Love does hurt.
February 14th, 2015. You're listening to TSN1290. We're part of the Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. Of course, the Legal Curve Hockey Show here. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mindell, who will return on NHL Midweek on Wednesday at 6 p.m. Ezra Ginsberg joins me. David Manuk of LegalCurve.com has done a great job. Might be angling for a permanent seat in this studio.
According
to Matt Leibel.
Actually, Matt never endorsed me. He just said that with the absence of Drew made it better.
And Remus has been doing a great job with the tunes. Of course, H&L after us is part of game day coverage. Troy Westwood filling in for Gary Lawless, and of course Andrew Hustler Patterson, Rick Ralph, the pregame show at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock puck drop. Shane Nighty,
our boy Dennis,
Paul Edmonds, and Dennis Bayak, three-man booth tonight, calling the Red Wings and the Winnipeg Jets.
Rapid fire.
Guys, first one. On Friday morning, former NHL head coach and friend of Ezzy Ginsberg, John Tortorella, appeared on Tampa radio stations 620 WDAE, and said the following. I don't think I did the job for our team in the second half of the season with respect to his coaching job in Vancouver. With our consistency, and I think that's what cost me my job. He said he deserved to be fired from his coaching job in Vancouver. Do you think, and I think we all probably agree that the job he did was worthy of him being fired. I guess the question is, and do you think John Tortorella will ever be a National Hockey League head coach again?
I think that's a good question, Richie. And
of course, you wrote it.
I was thinking that too. I didn't want to say it, but
you
I was thinking that.
You did the show
that.
Plan, so like, as you wrote that question. You can't say it's a good question.
Regardless.
I think, hold on, just to interject quickly, I believe what Ezzy was saying is he liked the way you phrased that question.
Yeah, I like the way you read my question. No, but I don't think so, Rich. I think John Tortorella last
like
year...
Kramer and Newman in the library when he's feeding him lines through the books.
With my words and your looks, we could do anything.
Before I let Romeo get in here, I think it's refreshing that John Tortorella admitted he didn't do a good job. I think when Tortorella was suspended for 15 games for that incident with Calgary and approaching the dressing
room, trying
to
fight Bob Hartley,
I really think that really summed up his year. I mean, John Tortorella, I think, has to get his own emotions in check before he can be a successful NHL coach. And when you think about all of the guys right now that were fired this year, Dave.
Yeah.
So we're talking Pete DeBoer.
Yeah.
We're talking Paul MacLean. We're talking Randy Carlyle. Don't forget Guy Boucher is up out there. We've heard Luke Richardson might be the next coach for the Buffalo Sabres. I think there's a lot of guys that are in line, Richie, ahead
Dan
of Bilesma. Torts.
Dan Bilesma?
So is that as part of slow fire, clearly. Is that a no?
Yeah, I said no.
I like the fact that he admitted it. I wonder if he's just admitting it because he knows that it'll help kind of diminish what he did, the fire that he caused, the firestorm that he caused in Vancouver, and hope that people will be able to say, okay, look, he admitted it. They're ready to move past it. And, you know, I mean, look, he won a Stanley Cup with Tampa. So, I mean, that gives him a little bit of credibility in terms of getting potentially rehired by an NHL team. I don't know. I mean,
he's kind of the Mike Keenan of his generation, right? Maybe they're a little bit.
I don't know. I like Keenan. I like Keenan's shtick. I thought
they both win cups though, and they both alienate their players to an extent.
Yeah,
and then they can't and they don't. They can't stay for a long. I mean, he's a little longer in Tampa and Rangers, but like their act wears thin is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's a good comparison.
And they didn't. That, to me, they both didn't adjust with the times.
Yeah,
Keenan played way too open style when it was the league was becoming defensive, and then Tortorella played way too much of a defensive style when the league was becoming a fast offensive game.
Yep. Yeah, I don't see Tortorella getting another NHL job anytime soon.
Earlier this week, several NHL players, including Winnipeg's Butch Goring, Sergio Mimeso, Manny Legacy, Brian Savage, and Todd Warner, joined concussion litigation against the NHL for failing to protect its players from the effects of traumatic head injuries. Where do you think this is all heading for the National Hockey League? Start with Dave first.
I don't know. I mean, I think that it's when you get players of who have name cachet starting to add their names to lawsuits and stuff, it doesn't look good. It just doesn't look good, regardless of whether you're going to win or lose a lawsuit. Because half the time, it doesn't really matter what the end result is. It's the damage that comes as a result of just being engaged in the suit in the first place. So I think that the NHL would be smart that regardless of what their legal standing is, I mean, they might have all the legal standing, all the case law may be behind them. But the fact is that the smart play from the NHL's point of view is to get out in front, be out in front of this whole mess and try and settle it, try and make the players happy. You don't have to accept culpability, but just try and do something that mitigates it and say, okay, fine, here we go. We're gonna make both sides happy with, and the truth is, make it go away. Because it's not a good thing to have in the public eye.
Right. And Richie, it's as the one guy on this panel who doesn't have a law degree, I'm the worst person to answer this. No, but I mean, this is obviously complicated because you're dealing with what happened decades ago, right? You're not talking about this lawsuit doesn't have to do with what's going on. So you're talking about the growing list of players who basically are saying that the concussion protocol, they suffered injuries and they want money from the NHL because of the fact that their careers were shortened. So it's obviously, as Dave mentioned, you hope that this is settled. But again, I'll say this. I do think the NHL and the NHLPA have done a good job working together to prevent concussions, and it's getting better. But as far as what happened decades ago, it's tough to say, and you hope that the end result is a fair one for the players that have joined this lawsuit.
NHL suspended Dallas Stars forward, Antoine Roussel. We know he plays on the edge. On Wednesday, for two games for cross-checking Boston Bruins defenseman Adam McQuaid in the throat on Tuesday night. Roussel is a repeat offender. People know that. He's been previously fined for sucker-punching Justin Braun of the Sharks. Do you agree with the suspension?
No. I thought he should have been suspended for at least five games. I was watching that live. That was the night, Tuesday night, when the Jets were playing the Wild, and we managed to see that during the intermission. That was extremely dangerous. Adam McQuaid, yeah. If you watch the replay, McQuaid begins to drop his gloves because Roussel's coming at him, and Roussel cross-checks him right in the throat. I mean, that was dirty. And I think two games is not enough. And again, we could sit here all day and say two games, four games, six games. I think you got to send a stronger message to a guy that's done this before. So to me, that's minimum five games.
I'm with Ezzy. It was just a vicious hit. I don't care if guys want to drop the gloves and want to punch each other in the face, but to take your stick and use it like a weapon, it's just idiotic. It was stupid.
I'll tell you why. You know it's vicious, because he cross-checks him in the face, yeah. And then Adam McQuaid, who's tough as nails, is down. Can't even go out.
Very cheap.
Last one, guys. Friday. On Friday's Cabby Presents on TSN, Dallas forwards Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, have been in the news a bit this week, played a practical joke for Valentine's Day on their moms, where they called their moms and said that they were going to propose to their girlfriends, who their moms didn't even know yet. We have the clip, Remus?
Well, you're so good at keeping secrets. You never said a word.
The reason why I want to call and I don't want you to freak out is because
I think I'm going to propose to her on this Valentine's Day.
You gotta be kidding me.
I wanted to propose to her on Valentine's Day.
What? Well, how come you didn't tell me about this? You're gonna propose to her?
We're actually in Colorado on Valentine's Day this year, so it works so perfect.
Oh, well, I'm happy for you. I didn't even think you had a girlfriend.
Ezzy?
First off, I think that was a very mean joke to play on the mums of Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin. I love Cabby, but that was obviously very funny. I think that, you know, that went on for a couple minutes there. That was good times.
Did I get a cheer or a jeer? Which one?
No, that wasn't a cheer or a jeer. I thought that was a question, a rapid fire question.
Don't we have a bumper for that?
No, there's.
Oh, how will you be spending your Valentine's Day?
There you go.
I didn't see that part of the show.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
Not even.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezzy, you have a cheer or a jeer this week?
Love to cheer Huss just for putting up with us all these years before H&L, sitting with us here in the studio. No, I'm going to cheer Scott Hartnell, played in his 1,000th NHL game. He's one of my favorite NHLers of all time, and for the style of play that he plays, to play 1,000 games is quite remarkable.
David Minuk.
I'm going to give a cheer to Canadian golfer Graham Dalot, who, no relation to Remus's girlfriend Leah Dalot, but he got beaked by a fan on Twitter, and the guy said, "I hope you go minus, plus three and miss a critical putt by 3 feet." And he said, "Well, actually, here's how I spent my day. I shot a minus seven on a perfect day at Pebble, then caught up with Wayne Gretzky. How was your day? It was the best." So I like that. That's my cheer.
My cheer this week goes to Kevin Cheveldayoff and Tim Murray for making a hockey trade. All we ever hear about is, you can't make a trade because this guy has term and this guy is making this much money. And they actually sat down and made a trade. And there are trades that can be made in National Hockey League if the GMs don't want to use the excuse of all the different things that are quote-unquote in the way. That's it, boys.
You can start cooking for Valentine's Day, Richie.
Oh, yeah. You wanted to set me up for that. I'm not even going to give you the opportunity to say anything about that. I want to thank our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. Thank our guest today, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, Guy Flaming of TSN 1260 in Edmonton, and Ken Daniels, the voice of the Detroit Red Wings for Fox Sports Detroit. I want to thank Michael Remus. He did a bang-up job today with all the love music that he played. Heartbreak, also. Heartbreak music and love tunes. David Minuk of LegalCurve.com filling in. Ezzy Ginsberg will be back on Wednesday with NHL Midweek. Drew will be back as well. Hold your applause, of course. Coming up next, as part of game day coverage on Birchwood, Chevrolet Buick GMC, coverage of the Winnipeg Jets game day against the Detroit Red Wings. Hustler and Lawless with Hustler and Troy Westwood. Enjoy the game tonight.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.